Welcome to Design Biz Survival Guide, a podcast about life and business for interior design professionals. My name is Rick Campos, and this podcast is my response to a design community eager to support, share, and inspire one another. We all know that some things simply cannot be taught in a classroom. I believe that our number one resource for information and inspiration is our peers. Join me as I sit down with industry professionals from across the country to discuss their secret to survival in the business of design. This podcast episode is sponsored by Perch, the design community's premier resource for appliances, decorative plumbing, and outdoor brands. Perch is dedicated to quality, service, and a heightened showroom experience, making them the preferred choice among architects, builders, and designers just like you. With locations in Los Angeles, Orange County, Palm Springs, and San Diego, their interactive showroom experience must be seen to believe. Fully functional displays and a demo kitchen featuring the industry's top brands provides the ultimate test drive for design enthusiasts. As a trade professional, you're eligible for their exclusive rewards program, Perch Premier, where you'll earn credits for every purchase of appliances, plumbing, hardware, and outdoor kitchens. This program is loaded with perks and benefits, so sign up today. Tell them you heard about Perch Premier on Design Biz Survival Guide. This podcast episode is also sponsored by Sidedoor, the design industry's newest and most innovative digital sales tool, created to empower interior design professionals to elevate your creativity and your profit. Sidedoor has partnered with our favorite trade brands that we all know and trust to develop a sales platform that will take your e-commerce approach to the next level. Now you can promote and sell all of your favorite trade brands direct to consumer through your website, blog, or social media, and experience the profit margin you deserve. Sidedoor is also a powerful purchasing tool for your business, providing access to over 100 trade brands to registered designers for simplified purchasing with no minimums or opening order requirements. Visit onsidedoor.com to learn more and to apply for exclusive trade-only access. Today, we welcome Brian Paquette to the podcast. Based in Seattle, Washington, Brian's design business model has reinvented itself over the years in response not only to business goals, but also to life priorities. In this episode, we discuss how scaling back his business made more room for his passion for design, a book featuring over a decade of his work, and how he made philanthropy a tenet of his business model. Let's get started. So Brian, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me back. Last time we were in Palm Springs. It's a little bit different now, but lovely to be back nonetheless.
Indeed, yes. We were sitting outside in beautiful Palm Springs for Christopher Kennedy's compound during Modernism Week. That's when we met.
Yeah.
And you were so kind to share a little bit about you and your business and your experience with the Showcase House. But I wanted to circle back with you to learn more about you because you're one of my favorite designers. I'm intrigued by you. I'm intrigued by your work. And you're so pleasant to speak with. And so I'd love to share you with the design community. So let's start by having you introduce yourself to the listeners and tell us a little bit about you.
Yeah, sure. So I'm Brian. I'm an interior designer and I live and work in Seattle and all over. But I am originally from the East Coast, from Rhode Island. I've had my firm for about 12 years, but I've been working in the industry for about 15 or 16 years. And we focus on high-end residential with a focus on art collections, mainly because my background is in fine art. And I live here with my husband and our two dogs, and we have a quiet little nice life.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. I remember when we first met and we talked about design, you talked about kind of leading with art and how nature wins when it comes to your approach for design. And I felt that was very intriguing to me. And I remembered that all of this time.
Yeah. 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 The nature wins thing. I don't know if that has to, I mean, maybe you could say the same thing in California, but I think so often people, like when they're living in the Pacific Northwest, are trying to combat the gray. and like, you know, and trying to make it warmer or something like that. And the fact of the matter is, it like, it just is. And it, you know, if you try to push against it, it's just, it's not going to go well. And so I think it's like, you lean into it and there's ways to make warmth. You just have to think a little bit differently. So yeah,
for sure. For sure. Yeah. What's your background? Did you go to design school or?
Yeah. So, I went to design school in Rhode Island, but I did not go to school for interior design. I went to school for, fine art and painting. And then, but did a bunch of different things, including, you know, punk rock, but, really focused on like painting, but, and that was like freshman sophomore year. And then I really got into like conceptual work and like installation based work. And so, sort of these large scale installations and stuff that dealt with photography and painting and printmaking and space building and just sort of like in performance pieces and stuff like that. So I kind of just like ran the gamut. I'd always been sort of creative in that realm. But I, you know, at that point, I did not think like interior design was my thing. I think I really thought when I was graduating school that I was going to be a fine artist, that like, that was going to be my thing. It was either that, or I thought I might work in like props departments. Cause I had always like really been, into that, whether it would be on like stage or for like, for someone like Ralph Lauren or like Anthropology or something like that. But yeah.
Well, Brian, don't think that I'm going to let you get away with that mention of punk rock and not talk about it.
So yeah, it's usually the question of what's that the thing that people wouldn't know about you?
we're skipping ahead.
still very much a punk at heart. Still listen to, you know, punk and hardcore music pretty much every single day. But yeah, I was I in high school I played drums in a bunch of punk bands, and then in college I sang for a touring hardcore band. So that was kind of like half and half of my college. It was like music and then art when I could fit it in. But yeah, that's, it's definitely very much a part of me. And it's, I think like the ethos of it as well. And, just sort of like being scrappy and, making sure everybody's, in, you know, joined in and involved, like those things still very much remain true to like the heart of how I run a business as well. So yeah.
Awesome. Now, I'm a musician at heart. You'll have to listen back to a couple of episodes. Anders Lasseter, who's an amazing architect, and also Max Humphrey, both have a music background as well.
So funny thing about Max and I think our books are by the same publisher, and I believe they come out on the same day.
No way.
Yeah. And Max and I have done show houses together. So it's funny full circle.
Max is awesome. Man, you must have stories. So, when we spoke before this interview, you were catching me up on your business and the evolution of your business. And I learned something interesting that I thought, if you'd be happy to share that with us, that'd be great. Because it sounds like you made some changes to your business, and they're not necessarily recent. They actually, you know, happened before we met, actually, in Palm Springs a couple of years ago. So not everything is a result of 2020. You had some interesting insight and made some changes. And could you elaborate on that for us? Because there could be some good lessons learned for other designers.
Yeah, totally. So I think, you know, like you're starting a business and you have all these aspirations and stuff for things. And like, you know, two of my biggest inspirations are Nate Berkus and Thomas O'Brien. And, you know, I'd always kind of like looked at like, I want this, you know, sort of multi-level business where there's product and there's retail. And there's interior design and there's a face. And I always wanted that at the beginning. And I got there, you know, like I opened a store, God, like 6 years ago now, which is insane. I had, you know, a staff of like 8 to 9 people. We have product lines. I was doing show houses. I was doing speaking engagements, like all that kind of stuff. And like, most of the time during it, I was like excited and you know, and like very flattered to be involved in what, or, you know, asked to be involved in whatever it was. But I think in it, and after it, I felt so drained to the point where it was like, I don't have the energy left to do the thing that I really want to do, which is, you know, client-based, you know, residential design. And so, you know, we're in the middle of the store. It's 3 years in, you know, 2 or 3 years in. Got a big staff. You know, they're working on projects that I may have little or nothing to do with, you know, trying to basically, you know, keep up with salary. And at that same point, I also met my now husband, and just really had like a big soul searching time, you know, figuring out basically, like my therapist says, he always asks like, what do you want? You know, which is like an easy question, but also it's like, no, not like, what do you want on the tip of your tongue, but like, what do you want? Like, what do you see for yourself now, a week from now, and, you know, 10 or 20 years from now? And, you know, part of that question had been answered by, like, you know, having my now husband, you know, my life priorities just shifted a lot. And I realized that, like, what I really wanted to do was really focus on client work. And I didn't need to take over the world, and I didn't need to have a store, and I didn't need to have like the ego that surrounds that. And so, you know, I made some swift decisions, you know, over the course of about a year, where, you know, I lightened the staff load down to 2 people. We closed the store. I moved my office back home, which I loved. I never liked going to an office. There's something I like, I want to work when I want to work. And, you know, part of like starting your own business is being able to call the shots and being able to call the rules, you know. So it's, if I want to work at 5 in the morning, I don't want to feel that I have to like go to an office. or if I want to work at, you know, 8 PM, which is not happening. But if I wanted to do that, I didn't want to have like all these barriers in front of me. I just wanted to be creative when I wanted to be creative. And you know, randomly that sort of it helped, you know, when 2020 came around. I am, you know, eternally grateful that I did not have a storefront entering 2020, and I did not have a staff of 9 entering 2020, and that I was able to be really nimble, not only like financially and business wise, but also just like mentally. It's really important. I think I go back to like, I still think and feel very much like a fine artist. And I feel like when I get these projects, they're like assignments, and I very much go into them, and I have to be in them, and I have to like, they're all absorbing. And I needed to give myself space to be able to do that, and not sort of fill it up with managing tons of employees, running a store, all that sort of stuff. And so, yeah, those were the major shifts. And, you know, it has paid off immensely in terms of being nimble as a business, and also just personally, it has paid off.
I'm so glad that you shared that, because as entrepreneurs, we're conditioned to hustle, you know. Yeah. And our business of design is just as competitive as any other business, and there's a huge learning curve, and there's lots of avenues to explore. And so I think there's a time and a place for that, but I also think that there's a time and a place to kind of sit back for a moment and ask yourself the important questions. Yeah. Like what you asked yourself, you know, what is it that I really want? Yeah. And how am I going to achieve that? So, you know, I too promote the hustle, but I also know that every now and again, you got to sit back. Maybe you have to scale back a little bit. You've got to edit accordingly so that life is good and that you're available to yourself and your family, as well as your clients and your art.
Yeah, totally. I wanted to, a few things. I mean, I wanted to step away a little bit. I wanted to be a little bit more selective with the work I was going to be taking. And, you know, it's not easy. I mean, especially in today's world with social media, I mean, like the imposter syndrome and feeling like you have to keep up and feeling, you know, this like this need to be busy and this need to sort of prove your worth. And I have by no means figured that out. But a lot of this has helped me just, you know, feel like, you know what, you get to do what you want to do. And yeah, you got to pay the bills. And yeah, if you want to keep up a certain lifestyle, you got to do that. But I think it's just about being really honest with yourself. And if being really honest with yourself is that you have 5 stores and 50 employees and all that kind of stuff, like more power to you. That is the place for those people. I was just not that person. And I, I just needed to like sort of understand that. But I don't regret like doing any of that for a second, because if anything, like doing experimenting like that is just like, that's just how I live. So, yeah.
Well, and how would you know otherwise? You exactly. really don't know unless you take those risks and you put yourself out there. You know, I think that the key to taking risks is knowing when to kind of realize, okay, maybe this was a not so great path for me. Let me renavigate. You know what I mean? Nothing is forever.
Exactly. Exactly.
And it sounds like by doing that, you were able to focus on things that are truly important to you. You probably would have never had time with all of that noise happening to really focus on this amazing book that you're that is coming out soon, that I'm super excited about. It's coming out in April. Look at, there it is. I love it.
I got it yesterday in the mail, which is like crazy. So weird to hold it.
Mine's on pre-order. I'm just waiting.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Just waiting. Tell me a little bit about the book. I mean, I'm a sucker for books, and I'm excited because I've already said how much I love your work, and now I'm going to have pages and pages and pages to look at, and I can stop stalking your Instagram. But the process of you know, creating a book like that must be exciting. It must be fun to look back at your work. But it's also, you know, it's a project in itself.
Oh, totally. Tell me a little bit about that. So it was a 2-year process, and, so daunting at the beginning, because it's like in your mind, it could go in so many different directions. Is it going to be like a portfolio book? Is it going to be a how-to book? Is it, you know, going to be kind of both of those things? And I will say, like, for the first 6 months, I had no idea what it was going to be. I knew there was like this push or this pull for me to do one sort of book. And I didn't really feel comfortable with that. And that was the how-to realm. Mm-hmm. I was much more in the mindset of, you know, basically it's project and I talk about the project, and maybe even less about the project, but more my relationship to the project and the client and how that relationship was built and fostered and created this ultimate, this home, you know, like out of getting to know each other and all that kind of stuff. So I had to really just like think like, okay, I have to streamline this process to me. So how would I do it? You know, I basically went back to art school. It was just, you know, and I'm not a writer, you know, like I wrote this thing and I am not a writer. So I couldn't write at home. I realized really quickly that I could not write at home. I needed to like, I was like, okay, well, where do people write? Like, oh, you go to a coffee shop and it's super like romantic. So that's what I did. Like I went to coffee shops. A, it got me out of the house, you know, which I, you know, mostly work alone. So it got me out of the house and I would just go to coffee shops. You know, I would take like some blocks and some days and I would look at the pictures of the project and I would just stream of consciousness, right? Mm-hmm. And that's how honestly the entire book was written. It was completely stream of consciousness. You know, basically punk rock in terms of that way. It was just like, I'm just gonna just like word vomit and just throw this out there. And whether it was me talking about process or my history or a specific project, I just really wanted to get sort of like my first, just sort of my first go and my first gut reaction to like, okay, here's these photos, you know, because we worked so hard with our photographer to do all these photographs and create these stories. And like, what does it mean to me now that I'm sitting back from it a little bit? And what did it mean to be in it? And that's how I wrote it. And I will say, I completely sent all of the unedited, just stream of conscious text to the editor. Uh-huh. And, you know, and of course my red lines were very long and very arduous, mostly, you know, spelling and punctuation. But when I go back to read it, it's just really honest. And I think that's like, something I'm trying to hopefully inspire a little bit more in our industry is just blatant honesty and pulling back the curtain a little bit. And so that was really the process.
That's amazing. You know, going back to the music analogy, you know, that approach is it's like studio time. Writing that book is like studio time. Like you go to the studio, you jam, you get it on tape. You know, you don't sit there and think about it.
Yeah,
just you make it happen, and then you just follow the process, you know, of editing, refining, and whatnot. Absolutely. And I also like your approach to the book. I'm now even more intrigued by the fact that it's kind of client centric in the sense that you talk about that relationship. Not enough designers really talk about that relationship, I think. And so I think it's not only going to be a beautiful book to look at, but it's going to act as a resource book as well for the design community, because I think designers can never have enough examples and recommendations and strategies on how to connect with clients. You know what I mean?
No, absolutely. It's sort of, it just makes it a little bit more human. The fact of the matter is like, we get invited into people's homes to like do this. How weird is that? Like, how strange is that? And sort of like, if you just take yourself, take your ego, both of you, your client and yourself, you take it out of it and just become humans for a second and really get down to brass tacks about like, why did you call me here? Why am I here? Why do I do this? And how can I help you get to sort of whatever your goals are going to be, functionally, comfortably, you know, aesthetically, you know, all of those things. And it's just like, just, I think it's really important on just a gut level too, to hear that like, these aren't just untouchable people and we're not untouchable. It's just like, we're just people too. And like, we have feelings that we want to emote through our homes and we want to be remembered, you know, by in our homes and all that kind of stuff. So, that stuff's important to me.
Did you use the same photographer over a course of time, obviously, so that you were able to curate a consistent look?
Yeah, totally. So I'm trying to remember. It's either like, I think it's 6 years. 6 years ago, I started working with Seattle photographer Harris Kenjar. Mm-hmm. And I'd kind of been told like, if in the future a book comes along, it's just going to make the process a lot more easy. So really try to like vet and find a photographer that like, you know, is going to really, you know, show your work in its best light. And Harris is definitely that person. He's a storyteller. He's a stylist. He's sort of everything you need on the shoot, all wrapped into one person. And, you know, like, if you work on a project for like a year or 2 years, you kind of have this tunnel vision as a designer about what you think you want to see. And, you know, every time Harris would come onto the shoot and he would see some scouting images sometimes and stuff like that, but most of the time he'd come into the shoot and he would see it in a very different way. And it created, you know, like I got my shots and then he would just shoot these just beautifully dramatic images that had just so much feeling to them. And so, yeah, so the whole book is Harris's photograph. Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. I wanted to ask you that because I think a lot of designers are kind of in that place right now where they're, you know, finding ways to further document their work and share it above and beyond social media and on their website. And that consistency is so important. Every designer is trying to achieve that nice, cohesive style about them that they want to promote, and it's not necessarily the only thing they do, but they, you know, once you have the body of work that you can really say, this is really me, like this speaks my language, to be able to you know, to demonstrate that, to illustrate that cohesively is really important, I think. Oh, totally. To a lot of design professionals.
Hey everyone, we're taking a quick break to pay the bills and to tell you about our podcast sponsor, Griage Textiles, a collection of micro-batch fabrics for the home. This designer-created line of textiles is grounded in modern simplicity and time-honored tradition. Each pattern is hand-drawn and screen-printed on Belgian linen by artisan craftsmen right here in California. The collection is represented by select showrooms and independent representatives across the country. To view the newest collection and to locate your representative, visit griagetextiles.com. That's G-R-E-I-G-E textiles.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for their designer trade program for perks and benefits exclusive to the design community. Now back to the show.
I don't want to dwell too much on 2020. I really want to put it behind us. But on the same token, I know that a lot of design professionals and entrepreneurs learned a lot of lessons. And one of the lessons it sounds like you learned when we spoke earlier was, you know, how to give back in such a way that made you feel good and right about being in the industry that we are and being as blessed as we are. You know, our industry wasn't impacted nearly as bad as so many others. Can you talk about that a little?
Yeah. So, and if anything, our industry soared. You know, I hear so many stories about people having their best year and stuff like that, which is just like, it's a weird thing. It's hard to hear, but you have to like, there is so much ebb and flow in business, and you've got to like sort of make sure you have your head on straight, take advantage of things where, you know, when they're in front of you, and be extremely grateful. The thing that I started, it was actually before 2020 happened. It was like the, you know, October before. So October 2019, a friend of mine and someone I look up to very much in the interior design world is Jessica Helgerson. And about two and a half years ago, she started this thing in Portland called the 1% Project. Portland has an insane homeless population. And right outside their, you know, their studio doors, she just saw it every day. And so she was like, you know, how do I do this simply? Like, how do I funnel some change? You know, we're working on these insane homes every day. And I feel like, and then you just see like, you know, the homeless like outside. So what she decided to do was basically take 1%, basically add a 1% fee on all their design invoices and donate that to a fund that would then distribute it in Portland to a bunch of homeless aid. And, you know, I was just like, this is amazing. It's so simple. It's so easy. It's a drop in the bucket, but like, we're also a business of like, a lot of money runs through the business. And so, you know, when 2020 hit, and I had started to do it in 2019, and we had just, you know, Justin and I had just moved to a neighborhood. And, you know, to be very honest, like, we're the gentrifiers. And, you know, I started reading more about our community and understanding that, like, it's really hard for people at a large scale to feel like they can do anything. And it's like, well, just stick with your community, just stick with your street. And literally just up the street, I mean, I'm staring at it right now at my window, is a food bank. Uh-huh. And so, you know, when we moved here, I started doing monthly donations to it, just as like, okay, this is how I'm going to get involved in my community. And then I realized that I wanted to funnel our 1% directly to that, because I felt like, okay, this is in my neighborhood. It's literally on my street. This is how I'm going to do this. And so basically we just add a 1%, you know, we talk to our clients about it, but we add a 1%, to all of our invoices. And then we match that at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. And it goes directly to this food bank here, which is serving a lot of people in this community.
That's amazing.
And I, you know, it's, I think a lot of people get stuck on like what to do. And I am 100% right there. Like, you know, you feel like you're not doing enough, or you feel like, where do I start? And this was just like, I'll just say like over and over again, this was easy.
Yeah.
All it is a line item on your QuickBooks invoice. It is so easy. And it's so easy for either yourself or your accountant to figure out, and like, stay local. And, you know, maybe it's just down the street. And so, that's what we did. You know, and it just felt even more important once 2020 rolled around, and you just saw inequalities that had never been in front of your face anymore. And I think it was important that they were in front of our face to really have a check-in with ourselves about our place in society and how we can help.
For sure. What was the response from your clients? How do your clients feel about that?
Literally no question whatsoever. It was kind of, I mean, yeah, no question / I want to know more about, you know, St. Mary's Food Bank. And I want to, it was no question at all. That's the thing. It's like, yeah. I think if it did anything, it just made people more conscious of what they could do outside of this one thing. So
yeah. That's what I'm thinking. I wonder how many of those clients left your office and went back to their office and said,
we need to do
pretty
more.
Easy. We can do this too. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. How do we spread some wealth?
For sure. Yeah. For sure. So Brian, you get to answer our signature questions.
Fantastic.
We didn't have time in our first interview for that. Starting with, what would you say is the secret to your survival in this business?
Oh gosh. You know, I live by be grateful and be great. And staying humble. There is a lot in this industry that can seem very shiny. But at the end of the day, we're service. And you know, we're a service industry, and just remembering where you are and remembering who you are is sort of like the key, I think.
Love that. Love that. And what would you say is the one thing you know now that you wish you knew then when you started in this business?
Oh gosh, when I started, hiring an accountant immediately. Should be like your number one thing, you know?
Can you elaborate?
Don't try to do your taxes or so. You know, it's like, I think I waited like two years in to hire that. And it's like, I wish I had done it, you know, like basically made it the first thing.
It's amazing how so many designers will say, well, that's a no-brainer. Like 50% will say it's a no-brainer.
Oh, yeah.
And the other 50% will be like, oh, I need an accountant.
Just... And the 50% who said that's a no-brainer, they were business majors. And the 50% who said, wait, we're all in the head artists.
Yeah. Exactly. It's like, yeah, we're very busy designing. We don't have time for that accounting stuff. That's good advice. That's good advice. And I know we already touched on this, but maybe if you want to elaborate, how would you say that you pay it forward in the design community?
When I was starting out, like I had no fear in reaching out to Thomas O'Brien. And I remember reaching out to like Daryl Carter and David Cafiro in New York and Grant Gibson in San Francisco and just being like, I'm obsessed with you. you know, like, and honestly, just, I wasn't necessarily asking questions. It was more like just putting the energy out there. Like, you inspire me to no end. You know, I study your work, all that sort of stuff. And just putting that energy out there, not necessarily asking any questions. And so like, you know, 12 years in, I think it's really important. Like when I get DMs from, you know, random ass people from, you know, that are just starting out in design and young or, you know, like, you know, second phase people, answering the questions, like they all responded to me, and all the people that I've looked up to in the industry have always answered any questions I had. And I think it's just kind of like fostering and being open. There's a lot in this industry that can be seen to be hidden behind closed doors, and I want to open those doors and just share, you know, whatever it is, whether it's a workroom, whether it's advice, whether it's, you know, whether it's a great accountant, if you're in the Seattle area, or it's a contractor or whatever it is, it's just like, we're all in this together. There's plenty of work, like just share and be open.
Amazing. Thank you. That's a great answer. Brian, I can't thank you enough for taking the time, for being on the podcast. I'm so glad that we were finally able to do this. How can the listeners find out more about you? What is your website and what is your Instagram?
Yeah, sure. The website is just brianpaquetteinteriors.com. My Instagram is @brian.paquette_. That's about it. The book comes out April 6th. You can pre-order it, you know, from all your local bookstores and online sellers. And Rick, thank you so, so much for this. It means a lot.
It was a pleasure. Thank you for answering my DM. Of course. See everyone? He does. He really does respond to the DMs. Thanks, Brian.
All right. Thanks so much.
I really appreciate Brian's honesty and transparency when it comes to evaluating business and prioritizing life. I believe that there is a time to explore and take risks, and I also believe that there is a time to narrow your lane and focus on what's really working for you and what is truly serving you. When happiness and creativity takes a back seat to business and the daily grind, it's time to look inward and make choices for our own well-being, and we should never feel obligated to apologize for that. I'm truly inspired by Brian's commitment to helping his local community through his 1% program. If anyone out there is interested in doing the same thing for your business, hit me up and we'll conference call with Brian to help you set it up. It's so easy. And if we all did something like that, just think of the impact it would have on our local communities and society as a whole. It's no secret that I am obsessed with Brian's work, and I cannot wait to get my hands on his new book. As of release of this podcast, April 6th is about a week away, and I'm counting the days. Pre-order your copy now to be among the first to enjoy it. And while you're at it, order an extra copy and surprise your designer bestie. I hope this episode has provided a much-needed dose of motivation and maybe even an aha moment for you and your business. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, be safe, be kind, and get out there and inspire.